They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
This is On The Commons with your host, Sue Bartholomew. On The Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And joining me today on The Commons, we have a lot of people. Some of you may be aware that Cyber Citizens for Justice in Florida, presided by Jan Bergman, set up a conference for homeowners. So this was a conference set up for homeowners, by homeowners, with homeowners. But what was really nice about this one was that there were a number of people who came from out-of-state attorneys, homeowners, other advocates, activists, and they all came together for a two-day conference to share ideas, to talk about issues, to talk about the problems, and to explore different ways of dealing with some of the problems, figure out what needed to be done. It was fun, it was funny, it was intense, it was heartbreaking, it was all of the above. And if you know, if you've been involved with HOAs, then you know exactly what I mean when I say that it was heartbreaking, because you heard some of the really, really heartbreaking stories. It was intense because this stuff is, the issues that were discussed over there were very, they were intense issues. And it was funny because on occasion there were some funny things. I mean, the people were just marvelous. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went down and I was there, and I met so many people. Some I had spoken to before, some that I'd heard of, some that I had actually interviewed. A few of them I actually knew and had met. A lot of people I considered friends that I had never met before, and that's something that's unique to this day and age, where you meet people online and you become friends and you talk and you exchange thoughts and ideas. And so it was really great, and I think this sort of thing needs to be done a lot more. I promised you in the past, we've already had one session where where I brought you some of the clips, and I promised you that we would do another session and maybe even a third session coming up. But some of the voices, some of the concerns, some of the people who were involved with the conference over there, unfortunately, I really wasn't very quick. I wasn't quick enough to get my recorder started. So you missed the introduction for the first speaker there, and the introduction basically by Jan for the conference, the opening remarks. But the first speaker that you will hear today is Beanie Adolph. Beanie is an advocate activist who lives in Houston, Texas. And what's very unique about Beanie is that Beanie has never lived in a homeowners association, yet she and her family have set up an extremely valuable website called hoadata.org. And I've heard so many stories, and I've talked to Beanie, and she was one of the gems. I consider her a real jewel. one of the people that I enjoyed meeting in person. And one of the stories she said was that when she was going through the list of foreclosures, she noticed that there were a number of them from her son's association. So she called him and she asked him, do you have any problems down there? And he said, no. She says, any foreclosures? He said, no. She says, well, guess what? You've had 60 foreclosure filings in your association. And I thought that, and the point she made was, you don't know what's going on. Anyway, get comfortable, relax, and sit back and enjoy some of the speeches from some of the folks from Florida. I didn't have a clock, so I didn't.
Yeah, I know. I thought about that, and you weren't even looking at the time here, so.
I couldn't.
Anything I did, so when I started doing this, they're looking at me and rolling their eyes like, what are you getting into? When I had about 5,000 cards of foreclosure filings, two sons and a grandson who was up at Harvard started getting interested. They joined me, and we produced our website. It is the an accounting of the active foreclosure filings in Harris County from 1985 to 2001. We were very conservative because we did not want the opposition to find one fault. And so we checked, double checked, and triple checked. They had not found one fault. So they turned their heads and played like it didn't exist. And so anyway, this is, I have some papers showing the homepage, and we proved that foreclosure filings are rampant, and most of the time they don't want to evict. Eviction is very bad press. They want all the fees and the attorney charges. That's where their income comes from. And so, in fact, I heard one of the CAI attorneys on a Friday radio program, and his advice to HOA boards was, don't make the 6 o'clock news. So I will turn it off then.
Okay.
Next week we have Shu Bartholomew. Shu is known as the talk show host of the radio show On the Commons, which you can listen to every Saturday afternoon on the internet. And I give you Shu.
Thank you, Jan, and thank you everybody for that wonderful, warm Florida welcome. It's really nice to be here, especially after the cold weather up in Virginia. But I got involved in associations about 20 years ago, and I'd like to tell you, I'm not a victim. Most people get involved, they've been victimized, they've been abused, they've been harassed, and I never was. I just didn't like the bullies. They were abusing my neighbors, so I thought I was going to put a stop to that. And I went into the office and I asked for some records. And I was told, you can't have any records, you're not on the board. So I said, all right, we'll change that. So guess what I did? I ran for the board. And I got all the records and more records than I even wanted. So I decided also, I was lucky at the time I met with a friend of mine who's become a very close friend, Frank Short, who's an attorney, and we decided if we were going to help people and if we were going to put a stop to some of this stuff, we were going to have fun. So my husband called us the HOA terrorists, and I could tell you some of the things we did. We drove the association board nuts. But that was 20 years ago, and things have changed, and unfortunately the laws are more and more heavily on the side of the association. So I can tell you what we did, and I'm happy to, but we did have fun, I can tell you that. And then about 10 years ago, I got involved at the national level, and somehow I ended up doing a radio show, a national radio show called On the Commons. I still haven't figured out how that came about, but we're on the air. You can get us 24/7. We podcast. My website is onthecommons.us, so feel free to check us out. And since I do have a national focus, I hear from people across the country. And quite often I get calls from people or emails from people, and they say, "Why, Shu, have I got a story for you? I bet you've never heard this before." So they start telling me their tales of woe. And I finish the story for them, and they go, "You've heard this?" I go, "Yeah. It's all over the place. What you're telling me is rampant." I did hear from one lady a couple of weeks ago, and she said, "I have a story for you." And this time, she really did have a story for me. Apparently, there's a board member who sneaks around in the condo and eavesdrops on the neighbors to find out what they're talking about. And if anybody says anything bad about the management company, they get a fine. That was a new one on me. But again, the problems, except for that one, the problems are all over the country. They're basically the same ones. They have multiplied over the last 20 years since I first got involved in this. And that's got to stop. And I think this is such a great opportunity to do some brainstorming and to figure out what you want. We can debunk a lot of the stuff that you've heard. We know that a lot of it is not true. But we can talk about that. And I guess tomorrow we're going to be focusing on problems and solutions, right?
And legislative reforms. Yes.
Boy, do I have some legislative ideas for you guys. See you all tomorrow. Thank you again.
Her name is Shu Basomi. Okay, next we have Mark Benson. Mark is known as a member of the Camp Council, and his specialty is trying to get back the reputation of the camps, which got lost somewhere along the way, and he tries to create the reforms necessary to protect owners against abuse in camps. So I give you Mark. Okay.
Good evening. It's Jan Wilson.
Sometimes on the topics we have our challenges too.
Okay. I've been involved with community association management administration and participation for over 30 years. Let's try this one. Okay. I've been on boards of several condominium and homeowner associations. I have an management company, which I just sold a year and a half ago, and I retired from the company about a year ago. I was on the original advisory council for condominiums. 15 years ago, and then I was on the advisory council for condominiums about 5 years ago, and now I'm on the regulatory council for community association managers. I can tell you that over the last, in my opinion, over the last 20 some years of community association management here in Florida, I think that the standards have deteriorated to the extent that management is not as accountable to the associations and to the members as they should be. They have, in my opinion, dumbed down the requirements of community association management to the point where the solution of the Division of Professions is if they find someone that's operating without a CAM license, in essence operating illegally and jeopardizing the assets of the homeowners, They investigate it, they find them, and then they give them a license application and give them a license. The educational standards that are currently in effect, according to the Florida Administrative Code, should be monitored by the division. The Division of Professionals and the Regulatory Council Committee Association of Managers. In the 10 years or so that this has been going on, actually, the managers have been licensed since 88, but the Regulatory Council hasn't been in effect that long. But they have never audited an educational course. So the department has no idea if the education that the managers are getting is sufficient or adequate to properly protect the associations. We have proposed new legislation, and this is on the CCFJ website, and also if you leave your email address, I'll put you on our mailing list to keep you up to date with the proposals. But we're proposing it being changed from a council to a board. In the state of Florida, a board theoretically has much more authority and responsibility than a council. This is what we want the board to do. We also want to license management companies. We've had too many instances where we get some wise guys who will hire a sacrificial manager. In essence, they just hire somebody with a license and claim to be a management company. They do some rather unscrupulous things. Of course, it all falls back on the manager who has the license, and the people that own the company are not licensed. So they sacrifice this CAM, do whatever they're doing, hire another one. And this pattern has been repeating itself in several instances. Also, as many people have horror stories concerning their associations, and oftentimes the CAM is the one who's out front, who's the one that's charged with fulfilling the responsibility, fulfilling the dictates of the board of directors. Oftentimes, CAMs are intimidated by the board just the way some of the owners are. They don't lose their job. CAMs have got to be held responsible the way other professionals are held responsible for their actions in conjunction with their client, who's the association. If the CAM is doing it illegally, they should know what's going on, they should know it's illegal, and they should make sure that they are not negligent nor culpable negligence in the actions of the board of directors. There have been several cases lately of embezzlements. We're investigating whether or not those CAMs were in essence negligent or culpably negligent, or did they participate? So these are the kinds of things we're trying to do for CAMs. We're trying to make CAMs more responsive to the needs of the associations and the needs of the unit owners, and get them to understand that they are not there to browbeat, they're there to serve. Just the way we are on the regulatory council, and we feel that the other people who work for the state are there to serve the people. Unfortunately, in the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, they refer to all of us, all of you, and all of us, as customers, rather than as citizens, that they're there to serve. And if you ever notice that the attitude towards customers is oftentimes more resentful than it is towards someone that you're trying to assist. And that's what we're trying to change at the DBPR. We're not getting a lot of support from Holly Benson, the NO relation, Mark Benson. But up there they tease her and say, "Oh, your cousin's at it again." So I keep trying to bug them. But I'm here tonight to hear from you suggestions that we can add to this legislation concerning community association managers. How can managers be more responsive to you? How can they help you? And how can they help improve the quality of life in community associations? So please, please feel free to offer your suggestions, and we'll try to incorporate whatever we can. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Next, we have Dr. Virgil Rizzo. Virgil was the first communal ombudsman here in Florida, and he did so good a job that his opponents didn't like him because he looked too much in their cards and found out too much what was wrong. So, with the help of the governor who had they ousted him quickly again, but he still works on improvement and betterment for the condo owners here in Florida. I give you Dr. Virgil Rizzo.
Thank you. Thank you, Jan, for inviting me to an HOA conference. As you know, I worked a job as condominium ombudsman for about a year and a half before I was terminated. And it's probably because I created so much havoc in carrying out the duties that were prescribed by statute for the ombudsman to carry out. We actually established all the necessary policies and procedures within probably 4 months of my election appointment as condominium ombudsman. And in so doing, one of the statutory requirements was for the ombudsman to recommend to the governor, the Speaker of the House, the head of the department, the head of the division, the Speaker of the House, legislation directed toward division problems, or anything within their jurisdiction, their personnel, their rules, and even anything that had to do with division. Well, I probably, in my first quarterly report, designated that the division and its personnel were totally incompetent to handle the problems that they had. Well, that got me called before the Secretary of the Department of Business Professional Regulation, Simone Marsteller, who dove into my report and called it lies and told me I not only fabricated it, but I had no right using such terminology to explain what the problem was. And my response was, I can't tell the lie, you know, and that was my job. And she said, well, we'll take care of that. And she proceeded to embark on a course that I think eventually got me fired. I didn't mind. I had it completed actually within the first year. I was there about a year and a half. Within the first year, completed all the tasks that I had to and established it with what little personnel and finances I had. And I was quite satisfied with the accomplishment of the Office of the Ombudsman. Even though I did ruffle quite a few feathers and created turmoil, probably too much turmoil on the other side. The other side meaning the association to prevent any changes to condominium law so that directors may proceed and continue with their normal abusive and mismanagement procedures. And I say this specifically, I'll talk about it maybe tomorrow, that the main problems in the condominiums were mismanagement and abuse. And for that, I wrote legislation and presented the legislation to the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. Is that the way it goes? Yeah, okay. And evidently they didn't have time, and they were lobbying really against picking up any of that legislation. And what really bothered me most was that we created a sound statute against abuse, and yet the opposition refused and objected to the legislature enacting the statute against abuse. That essentially means it's all right and we want to keep it that way. That kind of society, I can't function. It's just totally impossible. And I hope this year that the legislature sees that if they don't enact a statute against condominium abuse, they are condoning abuse. And that it's you, the people, have to speak to them and say, are you going to continue to allow these oppressive boards to abuse the elderly, mentally, physically, and in any way, fashion that they see fit? And this is actually the foothold that we tried to get into the door of the legislative chambers to have new statutes enacted. Now, I was invited here to an HOA conference. I'm not in an HOA, and I really don't deal with it. And I'm not trying to come out of retirement. I'm only here to continue my efforts in responding to the statutory requirements of creating the legislation. And I spent a lot of time, we spent a lot of time and work on these legislative recommendations, and I really would like to see them promoted so that I, in my old age, can live in my condominium with a little more something that I have something to do with. Thank you.
Thank you, Virgil. Just as a little remark on the side, we are just collecting funds with great success, actually. We are going to sue the division for not doing the job. We are sick and tired of their behavior. We are sick and tired of them not doing anything. They are only there, they think, to find excuses for boards violating the statutes. And since the condo owners pay their salaries through the $4, we feel that they're neglecting the job. But that's just on the side. Last but not least, we have tonight here David Kahn. David is a Houston attorney who wrote, and you, most of you will have seen it and know, the so-called AARP Homeowners Bill of Rights. It is a template which we are trying to use to create the necessary homeowners association legislative reform here in Florida. I give you a game.
What I find really exciting is how many people are here on Friday night. I've been talking with Jan on the phone. Today was the first time I ever saw him in person, and I had no idea. You know, he runs a website, as far as I'm concerned, and he's very smart. And so when I call him up and I want a story to tell to illustrate a problem, Jan has a story. Anna Commons has a story. There are lots of stories. When I started out, I did not know anything about these stories. Like most of us, the news was blacked out. I lived in an HOA, and they leave me alone. But when I moved in, I did get those little notes about, you know, move your garbage can, they, you know, so that it's right next to your pool. I don't know why they want me to. That's what they said. But I got into this because after I got a phone call from a friend of mine, and he said, I referred someone to you. She's a little crazy, but she's right, and she can pay. That was a voicemail. And the "and she can pay" definitely got my attention. And so when Geneva Kirk Brooks did call and said, I'm Briscoe's friend, I said, so what's going on? And she said, well, it's a long story. I said, okay. And she said, I've had a couple of lawyers, and they haven't been able to solve my problem. Now, this is usually a very, very bad sign. You do not want to be the fourth lawyer representing somebody. It's usually the client's problem. It was not Geneva's problem. And in fact, what she wanted to do, she did have money, retired school teacher, done a lot of things for grandparents' rights, done a lot of things in the community. I didn't know this because I had just moved to Houston. And she owned some rental property, about 15 rental houses around the city. She had managed to build this up to a decent-sized business. And in a number of these subdivisions, she would get attacked by HOAs. And in one of them, Northland, she decided to take a stand when they raised the assessments completely improperly. And she organized a group that was about this size to do a series of protests. And the board got pissed. And they sued her. And they wanted the judge to issue an injunction to stop the protest. She's doing it over and over again. Every meeting they would have, she would generate 100 people. You know, most associations can't get 5 people to come to their board meetings. So, some of you may know the U.S. Constitution and the Texas Constitution clearly prevent any judge from telling someone you can't protest. You can still do that in America. And so But, you know, she'd gone through these three lawyers who couldn't figure out how to stop this. By the time I came in, I was able to tell the judge, Judge, they want an injunction to stop her from protesting. You can't do that. And he looked at them and he said, I'm not going to do that. And then they said, all right, but we're still suing her for libel. Now, put aside the fact, slander and libel. One is in print, one is spoken. Geneva did both. She called the racketeers regularly, in print, whenever she could. And I will tell you that under Texas law, it seems doubtful that an association can be libeled or slandered. It's not a person. It's an organization, it's a nonprofit. It's not totally clear, but it's difficult. The cases go against them. But she said she didn't want to use that. She said, truth is my defense. They acted illegally in raising these assessments. And so after endless hours, numerous hearings, I mean, exhaustion is what the association lawyers, that is their tactic, exhaustion. The judge finally ruled against us. We got rid of all the other claims, we got them to drop the libel claim, but the judge said, no, actually, I think that under this stupid law that was passed, they have the power to raise the assessments. We don't like it, appeal it. Fortunately for us, Geneva had the wherewithal to appeal it, and we did appeal it. And we get up to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals reverses part of the judge's decision, but not all of the judge's decision. And she says, keep going. So we then try to get to the Texas Supreme Court. Now, the Texas Supreme Court had done nothing particularly helpful for homeowners in associations in a long time. There were some older decisions that had been decently protected. Basically, they recognized that in the case of ambiguity, the rights should belong to the homeowners. This is a pretty important concept. If they're going to take your rights away, they got to tell you what they're doing. But the Supreme Court hadn't looked at these issues for a number of years, and the Supreme Court also had a very bad decision, which said that if you owe money to your association, they can foreclose and take away your house. And that's even though Texas, I think like Florida, has a state constitutional provision that should prevent that. But I will tell you, Texas, it does not. So we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't even know if they would take the case. But in fact, they took the case. And they vindicated every single claim that Geneva had brought. Unanimously, 9-0.
Sorry, David, I
couldn't
help that.
9-0, with one exception. They said, well, everybody had good reasons to litigate, so no attorney fees for you, Ms. Brooks. Now, I will tell you, Geneva, by that time, it had taken 5 years. It took so long that she had already gone to her celestial reward, and she didn't need the money. And she left plenty for her kids, and bless their heart, they let us finish the case. But the idea that you could litigate for 5 years, and that you could overturn patently illegal action, 9-0, and that at the end of the day, the Supreme Court of Texas would say, but, you know, okay, we fixed it. Good thing you were there, Ms. Brooks. It's very disturbing. Along the way in that case, I had to learn a lot of the law governing homeowner associations, and I learned just how bad it was in Texas. And I'll tell you that since then, I've learned it's not just one crazy, wealthy lady. It's far too many good people, far too many good families have had parts of their lives destroyed by grossly overreaching associations, that's the boards, property managers, and lawyers, particularly lawyers, my beloved colleagues. You know, almost all the lawyers who don't practice homeowner association law see the world the way I do, which is to say that homeowners are people worthy of respect. This is not a complicated concept. People have worked hard to buy their homes, and they aren't going to wreck their communities. They don't see why homeowners who face hardship should face foreclosure over, you know, you lose your job and you're struggling to pay your medical bills and your food bills and get your kids to school on time and you fall $200, $500 behind your association. Why should you lose your house? None of the other people can take your house if you owe them a little money. What makes this, and all these lawyers, they all have people who come into them and they say, how can you help me? And the answer is, I can't, because it's too damn expensive and you're probably going to lose anyway under the laws as are written. What makes this worse is it's not an epidemic because it's intentional. This is deliberately spreading a disease, and there are unfortunately lots of bad people who make a lot of money doing it. They wrote the laws in Texas, in Florida, in California, before any of us got it together to figure out what was happening to us. I mean, very few of us have been going for 20 years, Sue.
I'm still here, David.
We've heard that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and thinking you're going to get a better result. We need a different result. And we are winning changes in Florida and in California and even in Texas a little bit. We're going to have to do things differently. I think that means we're going to have to do things differently in the state legislatures. We're going to have to persuade them to change the laws. And this is a fantastic base for doing it. And I am so pleased to be here to lend whatever support I can to make that happen.
Thank you, David. I think we know that reforms are necessary, and you know, when I go to Tallahassee, since quite a few years, actually since the year 1999, I am trying to create the reforms and see, the liens and foreclosures are something special because it can take people's home away. What annoys me is when that is being done for small amounts. I'm not talking about the deadbeats. Nobody wants to protect the deadbeats. But if somebody falls behind for $40 and his house is taken away from him, that's a little bit too much. We had one case actually where the association went after a 70-year-old lady for $1.98 in late fees. Finally, the judge kicked the association out of the courtroom and considered it frivolous, but it took 3 years to do so, and more or less her life was more or less destroyed. I talked with her son, and he said, you know, she's only crying. You know, all her life she never had to deal with attorneys, with courts and everything, and because of 198 they took her to court and she was devastated. And that doesn't have to happen, and I don't think this is in our society we should stand for that. So much said, we have a few speakers this evening. Let's start with the first one, with David Goldenberg. David is the CCFJ secretary, and he as well authored a book called Creating Homeowner and Condo Owners Association Documents, Protecting Your Dough. David has the idea that already the association can start by creating the correct governing documents to protect the owners against abuses, because everybody will tell you that even the best association is only one election away from dictatorship. We have seen communities run well, suddenly a new board and everything went down the drain, or vice versa. But if you have the right documents, it makes it much, much more difficult for boards to become dictators and run the show without asking the owners. So I give you David Goldenberg.
Thank you, Jan. I'm a little hard of hearing, so be patient. It's more difficult for me than normal to just sound volume. If I get too loud or too soft and someone throws something at me, it'll get my attention. I was in a homeowners association, and now I'm in a condo. My wife needed more elbow room to run a business from her home. She does international travel advice, so she needed storage space and decided it was either more room or I had to go. In any event, we found that our homeowners association had an unusual board. They thought they were aristocrats and above the law. It took a little convincing and a recall for these creatures to persuade them otherwise. At that point, we created a documents review committee to rewrite our governing documents. The upshot of that was a book on creating governing documents for homeowners and condo associations. By way of background, I'm one of those people who couldn't stand law school and got out early. I went into economics instead and found this a little more intellectually compatible and occasionally useful. With the passage of time, I found out that both of these approaches are different ways of looking at how you govern yourself and how you govern groups. But the economists have made some strange and wondrous contributions that are not well known. And I'm sorry.
There's two switches.
Try a baseball bat.
Let's see. Yeah. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. In the course of rewriting the documents, there was a lot of resistance because the opposition wanted to change a few things. For example, following the recall, we've got our community organized and passed a cap on capital spending, particularly for new projects and similar things. We initially thought of a $1,000 cap, and the advice of the attorneys who were generous and went up to $5,000, and being an economist, I put in an automatic adjustment for inflation. Eventually, the other side got back in power. They recently rewrote the documents. And among the modest changes that they introduced was an adjustment to the cap to $25,000. None of the projects they ever were able to dream up cost more than 5 or 10. So this gave them a pretty free hand to create an issue. They revised the cap in other ways. The board originally was restricted to one project a year. They removed that restriction. And the strangest thing happened. When they submitted the documents to the community, they made three statements. We are the majority. We know what the majority wants. And we represent the majority. Then the vote came in, and somehow it didn't support them. They got 42% of the vote. They needed 62%. They didn't make it. They're still in shock. You can change your documents and protect yourself. You can do it faster than the legislature can. You can tailor it to your needs. And you can do it in a way where they adjust the future needs automatically. And you can do it in a way that gives respect to the community and its members and sufficient power to the board to do its job, but no more power to do mischief of any kind. It's not easy, but if I may be modest, plagiarize my book and use a little common sense, It is basically, it's a simple set of changes and local phrasing to make sure you're compatible with the laws in your jurisdiction. Think about it. It's a different way, and there is one other advantage. If you stand up and do something of this sort, you're going to get the attention of the legislature because you're telling them, if you aren't going to meet our needs, we'll take care of it, and we don't need you.
Thank you, David. Next in line is Myla. Myla is what we call her, the Patsy Cognos lady, and she will tell us about why it is necessary, especially for elderly people, sometimes to have a companion pet, and why certain condominiums disallow it. We have seen one case where a cat that was in the condominium unit for 10 years, the owner got sued because she dared to complain about mold in the hallways. And the board told her, look, if you don't shut up about mold in the hallway, we're going to sue you about your cat. The case took nearly 2 years, cost a lot of money, and went nowhere because in the end the association folded. And Maya feels we need legislation to stop this. So here is Maya.
Okay, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Okay. My name is Maya Gensler, and I'm the founder and president of Citizens for Pets and Condos. You can find us on the web at www.petsincondos.org. We're the organization that's starting to make change that everyone said were impossible. And you might wonder how we can do it, because we're a very small grassroots organization. We have minimal funding, basically. We've had a few contributions, and basically the vice president and myself have put our own money into trying to do things. We have no money for advertising. As a matter of fact, because of this conference and advertising for this conference, we had a nice little upsurge in our signatures. Anyhow, we have a petition to allow pets in condos, and it's not just condos, any type of association-run housing. We have just passed over the 17,000 mark in signatures, which is pretty remarkable for our limited resources. And that petition is available to sign online on our petition, up to, on our website. You can print off paper petitions from the website. And we have petitions and brochures in the back of the room, too. I saw a few people signing tonight, which was nice to know. So who are we? We are a 501c3 tax-exempt private operating foundation that is dedicated to increasing acceptance of companion animals in condos and other types of association-owned housing, that would be HOAs, co-ops, mobile home parks, any place where it's an association. We stress responsible pet ownership as a way to achieve this goal. Our motto is creating a win-win situation for both people and pets. There are thousands of people who want to have pets and we want to help them. And there are also thousands of homeless animals who are needlessly euthanized. The kill rate down here is just horrible, especially in South Florida. And they're only killed because there's nowhere to place them. And we want to do all this in a way to keep the peace between neighbors. 63% of U.S. households have at least one companion animal, according to the American Pet Product Manufacturers Association. Compare that to the situation in Florida, especially South Florida. We can have huge complexes where no pets are allowed. I have driven along the streets and seen signs at entrance complexes that say, no children, no pets. I know of one condo that states no pets under any circumstances, which is a clear violation of disability law. We have a message for Florida legislators and realtors.
Okay,
we've gone. Our economy down here is suffering, and the housing market especially is suffering more than anywhere else in the country.
Okay,
and you're going to hear people saying it's the taxes and the insurance. Now, there's another reason, too.
And then you take
we're on the brink of a generation change. The baby boomers are starting to retire. And that generation of people, they very much value their individual
rights
and the right to choose the way they want to live. And guess what? They can't choose how they want to live. They're going to move somewhere else. We're already starting to see that. We've had members on our mailing list that say, we can't stay anymore. We're moving to Georgia. We're moving to Alabama, somewhere else where we can choose the way we want to live, including having pets and some of the other issues like having trucks, all kinds of issues, but pets is one of the most contentious issues.
When you come on the right hand side.
Another issue came up this morning. I was at a lecture this morning, and someone from the Broward Sheriff Department started talking about how crime is going up in this area. There are going to be some huge layoffs of American Express, and they're expecting the crime rate to really go up. And they discussed how having dogs could help prevent crime. Well, that's another reason that people recognize they have pets. What our organization would like to see is to have a law in Florida, like the one in California, that simply says if you live in association-run housing, you may have at least one companion animal. We know that's an uphill battle, and we probably won't see that for a long time. In the meantime, we want to get a bill passed to clarify the right to have an emotional support animal. Emotionally disabled people are having their rights trampled on all the time. And I'm going to be talking more about specifics of that bill tomorrow, what we recommend. We would also like to see a voluntary change, where complexes turn away from no pet deed restrictions to more reasonable pet guidelines. And we have some standard pet guidelines on our webpage, things that have worked other places. Another thing I'd like to see, and I'll talk to you in particular, we would like to see the AARP Homeowners Bill of Rights also include the right to have pets. We thought that was a glaring lack in the list of rights. Now, why do people want to have pets? You know, I said that there are all these complexes where no pets are allowed. But there are pets in these complexes. People will risk their homes, risk fines, risk all kinds of things because there is such a human need to have a soft, furry creature, someone to keep them company. I'll give you two quotes that we have on our website that kind of describes pretty well just what it is that makes people want pets. A meow massages the heart. Another one I love is, there's no psychiatrist like a puppy licking your face. On our webpage, one of the largest sections is a whole collection of links and comments about how pets help people have different health benefits, especially emotional health benefits. Pets are known to reduce stress. There have been public statements by President Bush and Oprah Winfrey about how the pets in their lives help them relax and deal with the stresses in their lives. Pets also lessen anxiety and depression. The Center for Disease Control says that pets lower blood pressure, cholesterol, triglycerides. They lessen feelings of loneliness and increase opportunities for outdoor activity and for socialization. Another thing that pets do is they help people heal faster from illnesses. Our webpage has become a clearinghouse for people with issues about wanting to have pets. We have a section on the webpage with solutions to animal nuisance issues. We have links to authoritative legal resources. We have links to condo reform organizations like Cyber Citizens for Justice. We have a letters section and a story section. We get calls and emails from lots of people trying, desperate to keep their animals or desperately wanting to get an animal. And you will see pages and pages of letters on our website. And that, believe me, that is just the tip of the iceberg. I know I spoke to a gentleman here who had called me. His story isn't on there. There are lots of stories. So I would like to close with this, that our organization is here to stay. We represent the new Florida. You've heard the term PC, politically correct. We're Pets and Condos, PC.
Thank you, Maya.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. That's onthecommons, all one word, .us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Thanks again for joining us and see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.